Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed, author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. Want to thank Julie Kelly for being with us this morning. Her book, January 6th, How Democrats Used the Capitol Protest to Launch a War on Terror Against the Political Right. And I got to tell you, I've been fully aware this is something that we've been talking about for quite some time. But there were things in this book, and for transparency purposes, everyone listening, I actually heard you, I think it was last week or the week before, on with Levin. And I thought, man, even when I think I know how bad it is, it gets even worse. It's gut-wrenching. When you went into this, and we're going to get into some of the detail components of this, but did you know that it was as bad as it is as you began investigating what's happened with January 6th and the way it's being used?
Thank you so much, Nick, for having me on. I really appreciate it. I will say I'm not shocked at the deep involvement by the government. And when I say government, I mean DOJ, FBI, D.C., the mayor, the D.C. agencies, and how instantly they were involved, not just way ahead of time of January 6th, but, of course, on that day. But, Nick, I will tell you it's been frighteningly jaw-dropping, shocking, and alarming to me is the depth of the depravity of the people in charge in Washington, D.C. I'm not just talking about the heads of these agencies. I'm talking about line prosecutors. I'm talking about federal judges. Listening to their open contempt, these now more than 700 defendants who have been hunted down by the FBI, arrested, charged, some of them thrown in a special prison in Washington, D.C. for January 6th defendants. I am utterly disgusted at what I hear these judges and prosecutors, and of course, you know, some of even the defense attorneys who are representing them. And by extension, they don't just have contempt for Donald Trump or the people who are charged. They are just the proxies. These people in charge of Washington, D.C., who hold all the power, have nothing but hatred and contempt and want revenge against tens of millions of people.
We've been hearing and talking on this show about some of these individuals that have, or they're facing charges of parading or trespassing, and this is nothing unusual or new necessarily. These things we've actually seen happen, but it's my understanding generally there's a ticket and a fine, but it has gone from that to these individuals, some of which have been being held in jail for a year. And it's just, even what we know publicly, we watched this summer of 2020 where individuals would commit acts of violence, and you have the Vice President of the United States helping raise money to bail them out. And then here you have individuals that are charged simply with trespassing, and they're put in jail for over, you know, a year. We're going on a year plus for some of these individuals, and, you know, seemingly no trial in sight.
Right. It's really important, Nick, for people to understand that the now more than 80-plus people who are behind bars are detained under pretrial detention orders sought by Joe Biden's Justice Department and approved by federal judges in Washington, D.C. These people have not been convicted of any crime. The overwhelming majority have no criminal record. Some, as you noted, and I do want to say, yes, a lot of them are charged with trespassing, but the government is also adding obstruction charges and conspiracy charges, which are felonies, to justify keeping these people in jail. Of course, those are two nonviolent crimes, very difficult to prove in both cases. But you do have men charged with no violent crime, and I mean not accused of attacking a police officer, had no weapon, used no weapon, damaged no property, who are now approaching a year behind bars while their trials are delayed by the Justice Department, going along again with these federal judges. Some of them will be in jail for 18 months before they even are able to defend themselves in court. They are, when I write in my book that they are political prisoners, it is absolutely true.
Right.
Because to your point, Nick, this was not what we saw for the thousands of perpetrators of the 2020 riots, including, I might remind people, what happened in Lafayette Square in Washington, D.C., which is federal property located right across the street from the White House, where there were violent rioters menacing the White House, which had to be put on lockdown. The president had to be taken to a bunker because these activists and rioters were so violent, they were burning down property. They burnt down part of St. John's Church. They attacked federal officers on federal property. None of those defendants have been were in jail for months, let alone a year and a half, on federal criminal charges of attacking police officers. To the contrary, the Justice Department still is dropping cases for not just the Lafayette Square rioters, but the Portland rioters, and anyone charged with federal crimes related to the 2020 riots. So we definitely have a terrifying double standard of justice in this country. And it's really unfortunate that more Republicans are not speaking out against this, because it really is nothing that should be happening in the United States of America.
We're talking with our author of the week, Julie Kelly. The book, January 6th, How Democrats Used the Capitol Protest to Launch a War on Terror Against the Political Right. I think it was, as we've seen more and more revelations regarding the Governor Whitmer case and how involved law enforcement was, specifically the FBI was regarding that, to the point it appears, based on evidence that's been submitted, that the whole thing was concocted and encouraged by our own government. And I started thinking back Fast and Furious. I started to think of all these other areas that government was involved. And you do wonder, all right, how much of this was facilitated by our own government? And I think it was just last week, maybe Washington Examiner had a piece that three of the individuals that were on the FBI's most wanted list just dropped off without any explanation regarding this. And one of the individuals was seen on camera assaulting a federal agent. One had a firearm, and one of the individuals, which is known by name, was actually seen on video, actually in inciting people to go into the Capitol. Now, these are three individuals that you would think would be poster boys for the left. I mean, they are actually doing what it is that the left claims the most dangerous amongst them were doing, yet they've just up and totally disappeared. And of course, the belief is that perhaps these were individuals from the FBI or some other division of the government.
Right. So I would point people to Revolver.News. Darren Beatty's reporting on this for the past several months is quite extensive and detailed, raising questions about potential FBI informants or assets who started helping to orchestrate what happened on January 6th months in advance. And this would include the person that you're speaking about, Ray Epps, who I'm sure a lot of your listeners remember is the man who's seen on both January 5th and 6th. Imploring people to go into the Capitol building. He says this repeatedly. Ray Epps is the man who whispers in the ear of the first person who breached the police lines outside of the Capitol perimeter. So he is sort of this Where's Waldo of January 6th. He's seen all over the city, both the night before and, of course, the day up. He still has not been charged a year later. Revolver.News also does extensive reporting on Stuart Rhodes, who is the founder of the Oath Keepers, who is person one in now, I believe, six superseding indictments against 20 or so Oath Keepers charged with conspiracy and a variety of crimes related to January 6th. But the number one co-conspirator, Stuart Rhodes, has not been charged with anything, even a trespassing charge, even though he was there on January 6th. And so the question now, Nick, is not so much who is being charged and what they're being charged with, but now looking at the people who played central, significant roles in January 6th and still have not been charged by the government, that should raise a lot of eyebrows and support, I think, legitimate speculation that the FBI and the administrative state, national security state, working with D.C. officials, really were responsible for what we saw on January 6th.
Talking with Julie Kelly, author of January 6, How Democrats Use the Capitol Protest to Launch a War on Terror Against the Political Right. Some of the information that you provide has to do with the physical confrontation. One of the few instances in which there was direct physical confrontation between law enforcement and some of those individuals. And if I remember correctly, these were Washington, D.C. police, but they were fully covered. They weren't wearing badges. Tell us about this.
So this is one of the most underreported aspects of January 6th, and that is how Capitol Police and D.C. Metro Police, contrary to the popular narrative, were very prepared for what happened on January 6th. Many of them were seen in head-to-toe riot gear with face shields and helmets and then face masks so you could not see their face. They had gloves on. They had boots, jack boots on. They were not recognizable. They didn't have badge numbers on them. And what happened, Nick, is they started really attacking the crowd of protesters outside of the building. Now, these were a lot of people who had walked from Trump's speech. They were waving flags. They were singing outside of Capitol grounds. They were not trying to enter the building. And all of a sudden, you see police, D.C. Metro and Capitol, throwing explosive devices into the crowd. So this would be things like flashbangs that when they hit the ground emit this huge burst of light and sound. D.C. Metro Police were throwing something called a sting ball, which when it hits the ground deploys rubber bullets into the crowd. So you could see people who have been struck by these bullets who are bleeding. They also were dousing people with tear gas. Capitol Police had these rifles that they were putting pepper balls in, which emits pepper gas chemicals. When shot into the crowd. So they were attacking protesters. And this is what prompted a lot of the physical confrontations that you see between police and protesters. I've watched tons of video, and I talk about this in my book, and there's a lot of firsthand accounts of what police were doing and how the crowd turned on the police. And, of course, this all led to the outrage in the crowd when they found out that a woman had been shot and killed inside the building. And many people saw Ashley Babbitt, an unarmed female veteran, being dragged out of the building, bleeding. Of course, she died at the hands of a Capitol Police officer. So there's a lot more to the story than what most Americans saw going on for 4 hours that day. And certainly the clips, the cherry-picked clips, and accounts that most people have seen on a nonstop loop since that day. And so those are just some of the details I get into in my book.
Well, and speaking of cherry-picked, it was clear the video that was released, it was very exciting in the beginning. And, you know, there was footage of Mitt Romney or others who were being, you know, whisked away and this whole imagery. Yet there's so much footage that they have tried to stop from being released. And I know just little bits have been. I remember months ago a judge ordering some of it to be released. And it was clear why they didn't want it released, because it showed law enforcement officials opening the doors and escorting people into the Capitol.
That's exactly right. So the Justice Department, that day, Capitol Police captured 14,000 hours of surveillance video on its extensive security camera system. This is in every building, of course, the Capitol building, outside grounds, etc. So DOJ has now in its possession 14,000 hours of surveillance video that they have designated highly sensitive government material. So basically classified information. Every clip that's used in court, especially for these pretrial detention hearings, is under a protective order. This includes clips as short as 30 seconds long. Hmm. So defense attorneys have to go to court and demand that the protective order be removed. And so then it can be released to the public. The clip that you're talking about is a 40-minute clip that clearly shows Capitol Police officers standing by on the upper side of the Senate side of the building, allowing at least 300 people into the building, not arresting them, not telling them that the building was closed to the public, This happened around 2:40 that afternoon. So the joint session had already been recessed at that point. So you had hundreds of people walking into the building. They're, you know, thanking Capitol Police, and they are under the assumption, because the police are letting them in, that they are not committing any crime. Well, you turn around and those people are being hunted down by the FBI, arrested and charged with trespassing and other crimes. So the idea that Capitol Police did not let people into the building is yet another aspect of this narrative that is completely false and is proven by this video, which is why the government does not want this huge trove of video recordings released to the public, because it will shatter many more myths about what happened that day.
We're talking with our author of the week, Julie Kelly. January 6th, how Democrats used the Capitol protest to launch a war on terror against the political right. I've got two more questions. The last one that I'm going to ask is just how far they're going to take this, that being the Democrats in this terror against the political right. But I wanted to ask you one question before that. And I saw a few days ago there were reports at one of the news outlets, I think it was Washington Post, that Jim Jordan is refusing to cooperate with the committee. And I thought, well, he tried to when McCarthy appointed him to be on that committee, as he the minority party has the right to appoint individuals. Nancy Pelosi said, no, I'm going to pick whom it is that will be on this committee. That's where Liz Cheney would come into play. But I did think it was interesting, for all this focus about Republicans don't want to comply, Nancy Pelosi doesn't have to. Explain to us the significance of that.
So, to your point, Kevin McCarthy appointed five members to this select committee. Two of them, Jim Jordan and Representative Jim Banks of Indiana, the Democrats objected to. And they did not want to seat them on the committee for obvious reasons, because they were going to start asking some tough questions, not just of the people, the witnesses, but of course the people on the committee, and certainly the involvement of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her staff. So she refused to seat them. Kevin McCarthy pulled all five of the members, and then of course they appointed the two pretend rhino Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, to sit on the committee. So there is a lot of dispute as to whether the January 6th committee has now been formed as the original legislation authorized, which is that the ranking minority leader, Kevin McCarthy, would appoint people to the committee. So he did, and they were bounced up. So now the question is this an illegitimate committee? Which, of course, it is. So now you have Republicans and you have other witnesses like Steve Bannon saying, no, we're not going to testify, not going to turn over all these documents that you want. And so they are now referring some of these people for contempt of Congress. The DOJ, of course, is happy to go along with it. They have charged Steve Bannon, for example, with two counts of contempt of Congress. But the Democrats are getting desperate. And anyone who paid close attention or any attention to the overwrought hyperbole theater of the one-year anniversary of the insurrection, quote-unquote, last week, knows how much the Democrats are trying to get out of what happened that day, and how they are using it, as I say in my book, to launch a war on terror against the right, which has already begun, and the January 6th committee is part of it, and this Justice Department is a huge part of it. But they're also going to use, they are using their surveillance tools to collect information to people. Certainly to scare people in both of them out of dissent or any political protest, which is really another frightening aspect of all of this.
Well, and Nancy Pelosi, it's my understanding, they basically set this up so she, as the person in charge of much of this, they can't question her at all.
Right, they can't, and of course, as part of the legislative branch, they can't really FOIA any of her material or communications. So this raises another good point, Nick. Why would Nancy Pelosi, why wouldn't she turn over all of her internal emails with, say, Capitol Police or the Sergeant at Arms, or certainly Muriel Bowser? Both of those women, both of those leaders, rejected offers, especially by President Trump, to bring in thousands of National Guardsmen that day to help protect the Capitol, to keep the city safe. They rejected those calls. Now, the question is why? My opinion, after studying this closely for the past year, is because they wanted to keep the Capitol grounds insecure. D.C. Metro and Capitol Police had their marching orders that day, which is partially to attack the crowd, to provoke and incite the crowd, and then in some areas to let the crowd in. So they did not want additional security forces there. They didn't want National Guardsmen looking at D.C. Metro Police and saying, why are you throwing rubber bullets? Why are you hitting these people with rubber bullets? They're not doing anything wrong. They didn't want any pushback or any scrutiny on the ground that day. And so that's a great question. Why isn't Nancy Pelosi turning over all of her documents and emails? They want Donald Trump's communications dating back to April of 2020. We can't get anything out of Nancy Pelosi's office. This makes no sense.
How far do you think that they're going to take this? I mean, of course, they've kept individuals, as you mentioned and write about in your book, in jail all this time. I know I've heard you note that there was a judge in sentencing that even cited the race of the two individuals as being white during part of the sentencing, which you would think would be completely, totally unacceptable. I know some elected Democrats are trying to use this to block Trump from even being able to run for president. Where will it stop? How far will they go?
I do think that a big part of this is trying to damage Trump so much that he cannot run for re-election. I don't know if they will be successful. I highly doubt it. But what really is going to come out of this, Nick, and we already see, and we saw this last week, and this has been it from the beginning, the Democrats do not want any laws in these states now run by Republicans to tighten up election laws that were loosened in advance of the 2020 election under the pretext of the pandemic. So they want to go back and make sure that laws that regulate the handling of absentee ballots and certification envelopes, that ban ballot harvesting, that loosen signature matching, all of the things that led to the really insecure rigged election of 2020. Republicans want to tighten up those laws in many states. The Democrats want to, by extension, say those Republicans are really insurrectionists. They bought into the quote-unquote big lie that the 2020 election was stolen, and so by implementing really tight and tightening these election laws, they therefore are supporting the insurrection. Yeah. So Democrats are going to try to push as quickly as they can to nationalize election law, which we saw under the For the People Act, which takes over and usurps the constitutional authority of the states, state legislatures, to write election law for their own states. The Democrats want to take that over. They want to take over even redistricting processes. And so that's really what they're going to use this committee to do. They're going to release reports, and they're going to release legislative relief, as they would call it, to make sure an insurrection never happens again. And this would be to take over national elections.
Well, and I should finally ask here, I mean, given that it's just agreed upon by the media and Democrats, of course, that this was an insurrection, how many of the thousands of people that were involved in January 6th have been charged with insurrection?
No one has been charged with insurrection.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
It sure is, yes.
Julie Kelly, author of January 6th, How Democrats Used the Capitol Protest to Launch a War on Terror Against the Political Right. Thank you so much for this very, very valuable act of journalism and for being with us this morning.
Nick, thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Springfield's Talk 104.1, author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. I'm Nick Reed.